All right, everybody, welcome back to Off the Grid on the Record, the podcast where we speak to operators, founders, and changemakers across solar, clean tech, and sustainable infrastructure. I'm your host, Yarik, and today's conversation is with Ron, the founder of Earthkind Energy Consulting, a firm that helps property owners and institutions navigate the clean energy landscape, all the way from solar and EV charging to air and geothermal heat pumps. Ron isn't just a consultant, he's a strategist, a policy advocate, and someone who's been working at the intersection of tech, regulation, and economics for years. In this episode, we dig into what's really slowing small solar companies down, the top three mistakes that stall growth, the blind spot installers don't always see, and why understanding policy might be the missing piece in a lot of clean energy strategies. So let's get into it, Ron. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Yarik.
Yeah, you got it. Where are you calling from today?
So I'm in New York, in the Hudson Valley, New York, if you're familiar with that, a little bit north in New York City.
That's amazing. I'm up in Canada. So, I mean, I guess similar area. So we got the same weather and all that going on right now, but that's great.
Whereabouts in Canada are you, eh?
I'm just around, Toronto area. So, you know.
Yeah. I love Toronto area. It's beautiful up there.
Exactly. It's nice. They got a lot of good stuff going on, especially in sustainability. So I think it'd be an exciting conversation to see. But, you know, great to have you here. Really appreciate you making the time. And, you know, I was kind of exploring Earthkind's site earlier, and it's really impressive. And what really stood out to me was how deeply you've, you know, embedded policy advocacy and strategic consulting into the clean energy deployment process. So, you know, not every consulting firm is tackling solar heat pumps and, you know, EV charging together like that. So maybe give us a bit of a sense of your background, what you're seeing across clean energy and infrastructure, and then we'll talk through what's working well and where challenges are popping up, especially for, you know, smaller players in the solar space. So yeah, give us a bit of an introduction, and sure. The floor is yours.
Sure. So thank you very much. So I started out a bunch of years ago, actually, on energy policy. That was my original entree into this whole field. And it was back when utility rates, not too dissimilar to today's discussions, they were going up dramatically, double digits year after year, 25%, 18%, just amazingly devastating increases, especially for folks that were on fixed incomes, right? So started out as an energy policy guy, doing a consumer advocacy thing, started testifying before Public Service Commission and legislators about the need to reform the utility rate-making process. And that was the beginning of my career. And over time, that's kind of evolved. So I've continued to stay involved with policy. In the original parts of my career, it was keeping the cost of the so-called too cheap to meter nuclear power plants. It was going to create electricity so cheap you wouldn't even have to meter it. And then 300 million went to a billion, went to two, went to 4.4 billion at 4.2. We got a consumer cap on it on $7 billion. The Long Island Lighting Company went bankrupt down on Long Island with the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. That was the last power plant to nuclear plant to be attempted in the Northeast and definitely in New York State. Almost bankrupted every utility in the state. And we realized that, hey, you know, nuclear power sounds great, but it's not cheap like everyone thought. So started out in policy, started moving on a number of other issues, ran into various different pieces and started rolling out programs. So there's been a lot of evolution in energy programs over the year, and those programs, the policies, drive the programs, which then lead to projects. So to give you a sense, I was the head of the Solar Industries Association in New York State for a bit down in sort of 2007, 8 to 2011 or 12, thereabouts. And at the time, the solar industry was really struggling. It was all just mom and pop organizations that would go through the incentives. And in 3 or 4 months after the incentives were improved, they'd be out of incentives, have to go back. Mm. Everything would stop, go back to the Public Service Commission with hands out, asking for another wave of incentives. It would go forward for again a bit. But it was stop and go, and that was just devastating. When you have that type of uncertainty and that type of structure, what happens is everything just slows and you can't get anywhere. So we came together and decided first to broaden the industry. So it wasn't just mom and pop solar institutions anymore. It was starting some of the big guys, but it was also the middle guys. It was the insurance companies, the lawyers, everybody pretty much in the value stream, all the stakeholders. And that's now created the New York Solar Energy Industries Association, which is a force to be reckoned with in New York State.
Amazing.
And at the time we got in place the New York Stunt Program, which is was $1 billion. Now it's another $1 billion worth of incentives for programs, for solar programs over 10 years. It basically gives certainty to the industry, which has been really critical to its growth and the fact that we're now really the only sector that is achieving New York State's climate goals is really the distributed solar industry. And that's primarily because there's been certainty and there's been growth and there's been decrease in cost and a lot of different pieces that came together.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool stuff, you know. So policy is key. I was involved in the 90s. In the 80s, I helped push for demand side management program. So at the time, for those who are familiar with some of the utility regulatory structures in the country, New York had a similar structure where basically utilities would rate base all their assets and then they would get a return on that investment. So the more they spent, the more they got. So, hey, I'm going to pay my office. Great. We're going to make a 10 to 15% profit on that. Lovely. Let's do that. Let's take the corporate jet to fly here, there, and everywhere. Fantastic. Who cares what the rate costs are? Because the more we can put into the rate base, the more we'll make. And that was not a good system. It's cost plus. It's never really a great idea, especially when you're dealing with a monopoly utility that you don't have any choices, no competition, et cetera. So in the 80s, we pressed for, and in the 90s, we've got demand-side management programs. And so instead of investing, let's say, $4 billion in a new power plant, if your utility would invest $2 billion, half that amount in efficiency, they could save the same amount of energy that the plant would have produced, and it would save consumers money. And yeah, they'd raise the rates, but they wouldn't raise the rates as much as if they had built the power plant. So demand-side management came into place, and there were multi-billion-dollar programs throughout the state, throughout the country, pushing these programs, making these happen. There was energy efficiency, everything from light bulbs to motors, drives, all sorts of electrical energy efficiency measures that were put into place. And then around 1996, the policies changed, and we decided as a state to join a bunch of other states who did like Enron had proposed, if you recall that name from years ago, to deregulate the electric utility industry. And instead of having a monopoly industry that had generation, transmission, and distribution, we would tell the utilities, sell off all your generation. We're going to have competitive generation. We'll take care of transmission later, which, you know, it's been an interesting revolution. We could talk about that separately too. And then utilities, you're just going to be pipes and wires. You'll just be distributing the energy and there'll be competitive sources of electricity. So in 1997 or so, 1998, that policy came into place. And then all of a sudden, the cost recovery mechanisms for the demand side management programs disappeared. And in a period of 9 months, 90% of the industry was wiped out. 10,000 people lost their jobs in a period of a month in around New York State. And it was just devastating. And for a long time, there was no efficiency. There was no solar. There was no programs put into place until, again, people came together, advocated for, and won some policy changes that set up what is now the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. There's been an evolution of history in terms of types of incentives that come out. And we can go through those if you'd like, but it's all past history now. And where things are is that there's relatively stable incentives structures for a number of different measures. And that's where EarthKind and our consulting comes in, is we help people figure out for their particular situation, what's the right technologies, proven technologies that will work. What are the incentives that are out there that we can get that will help reduce that upfront capital cost and ultimately operating costs? And then who are the providers who can do that kind of work and do it in quality fashion? Then we make sure that everything gets done the way it's supposed to. So yeah, we've got an interesting kind of evolution in history, and started out on policy, ran into programs, rolled out a bunch of different programs on energy services, as well as clean generation with wind and then solar. And then for the last couple of decades now, we've been doing projects, and we help all different kinds of entities, large, small, medium, with figuring out, okay, you have big energy bills. Where is your money going? What can we take that stream of expense and turn it into a way to save money, reduce those expenses on an operating basis. What type of capital projects can we do? Sometimes performance contracts, other ways of financing it, either on the books, off the books. For-profit entities have one structure, nonprofits have a different, government's a little bit different. What are the different pieces out there that we can put together that's going to reduce your energy cost and have a positive impact on the environment? So that's what we do.
It's amazing. It's a lot of moving parts. It's a lot to take in.
A lot of pieces. Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, that's
life, right? I mean, who doesn't have too many balls to juggle, right? So.
Exactly. Well, then I guess the natural next question is, can you give us a snapshot of like your role at Earthkind and, you know, how it connects to the bigger picture of, you know, clean energy transformation? And I guess, what does the typical day look like for you? If sure. That's such a thing.
Yeah, well, that's great. Great point. And depending on the day, I am doing different things, which, as my wife reminded me last night, is good, right? Because who likes to do the same thing every day, day in and day out, and get bored, right? So I got to say, it's definitely not been a boring existence.
That's great.
So we have a kind of a cross-section of different things that we do. We provide hands-on consulting for projects for property owners, and in particular some multifamily mixed-use developers who want to build out, let's say, multifamily buildings with commercial properties underneath that then want to access the technologies, the incentives, and the financing to make that all happen. So we do consulting with them. We have some higher-end single-family homeowners who are building new structures where we're doing net zero work, where it's everything from tight envelope through solar on the roof to geothermal heat pumps, electric vehicles, charging stations, battery storage, backup generation, so that they become really self-independent entities, you know, self-controlled independent entities. They deal with the utilities still, but they have backup built in so that no matter what happens, they're going to have power and they're going to keep going. And it's a really efficient and cost-effective structure where once they pay for the solar and the solar is generating pretty much all their electricity, that electricity is covering not just their electricity needs, but also their heating and cooling needs and all the other functions within the house. So it's that kind of turnkey, total net zero approach works for some people, especially new construction. It's like you should really think about it no matter what type of entity you are. So on higher end single family residents, we do that. We do that with multifamily mixed use developers. Sometimes we're just consulting on a particular technology. We have some clients that, for instance, we do a lot of work with the New York Self-Storage Association with self-storage facilities, which really they just want to rent out their roof to a solar company because they're looking for another revenue stream, right? So there's that aspect and that opportunity. And then there's new construction opportunity. And then there's existing opportunities. But simultaneously, I'm also involved always in policy, keeping an eye on the policy. So with various different entities nationwide in the U.S., there's an entity called Environmental Entrepreneurs, or E2.org. I've been a chapter director of that for about 12 years or so now. And they really focus on the fact that it's not business and the economy versus the environment. They go hand in hand. And they've discovered that. They came out in the early parts of 2000 looking at the auto industry in California and how could they build an industry that simultaneously would start to deal with the pollution impacts of transportation. They did that really successfully, got a bunch of laws and regulations into place that helped everything move up and really had led the country in that. And since then, E2 has been doing that kind of work all throughout the country, and I've been lucky enough to be part of that in New York. In New York as well, I mentioned I was part of the Solar Industries Association structure. I passed the baton, and that's been a great thing to see that organization just thrive and flourish. So I'm a big believer in the transfer of power and having new people come in with different ideas. And they just took what we had started as small mom and pop, transformed, and then they took it on, and they're just doing tremendous work. So I stay involved with them. I stay involved with the geothermal industry. I'm involved with the electric vehicle industry. And then I do a lot of work in Westchester, New York. And Westchester is the county just north of New York City. It has the same utility, Con Edison, as New York City does for 90% of the properties. But it's 43 different municipalities that have jurisdiction over what happens in their particular locales. And in New York, that's called a home rule state. That means that that village or town or city makes their own decisions in terms of a lot of permitting and what they have allow happen, doesn't allow happening. And so it's kind of an interesting thing keeping them all on the same plane in terms of authorizing solar facilities or other permitting things that can really slow up and destroy an entity. So I'm involved with the Business Council in Westchester as well, which is one of the largest business organizations in the state. And it's actually one of the most active and I found effective business organizations in terms of business councils. I've dealt with hundreds of business councils over the years, and they're doing great work. And what they raised a number of years ago was the fact that energy is key to the economy, it's key to the environment, it's key to jobs, it's key to all these different aspects. New York State, as you may know, has one of the most aggressive climate laws in the country, in the world, really the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And that takes us to hitting certain goals, 70% by 2030 and 100% or close to it by 2050. And yet they raised the question of, well, you know, we're looking at these goals and we're not seeing how we're going to hit them and how are we going to hit these goals and how much is it going to cost people? And they raised those questions for several years. And then a few of us got together because we're part of the Business Council. And we said, look, it's great to raise these questions. That's okay, understandable, right to do it. But really, what's the solution? Because we have to have this clean energy. Without this clean energy infrastructure, we're not going to have enough power. And that's surely becoming very clear and very true to everybody. We need the additional power. We're using more power every day for everything we do, from our laptops and computers to our smartphones to our data centers to our AI, and it's just growing. And as we electrify the heating and cooling systems, as we electrify the heating systems in particular, our thermal systems, as we electrify the transportation system, that is going to grow exponentially. So we have to come forth with a generation and a power focus that creates new generation. And meanwhile, we have communities that are passing moratoriums against community solar plants and passing moratoriums against battery storage, which would be key to keeping them up when the extreme weather events hit and to keeping the rates down, which they are now complaining about because rates are continuing to escalate. So there's all these diverse factors that always come into play. And on a project basis, I love working with individual clients and figuring out what's the right solution for them, whether it's a tax basis, own, lease, power purchase agreement, different ways of financing things with alternate financing sources. But on a programmatic and on a policy basis, I think it's really important that we always pay attention to that, because if the policy changes, you can get wiped out. If you don't have the right policies in place, it gets too hard to do business. If we don't have the right programs that come out of those policies, it gets really difficult to do things. And then ultimately, it's the projects that drive everything. So making sure the projects can get done and can get done well is always key to our continuing evolution.
That's amazing. And you talked a little bit about the clients that you're working with, but I think another aspect of it is, you know, how do you go about aligning different clean technologies? Because you have solar, you got EVs, you got heat pumps. You know, how do you, I guess, unify that, or how do you present that to a client into like unified strategy?
So each client's a little bit different about where they're coming from, what they're currently doing, what they want to do, where they want to head. And so on an individual client basis, it's really sitting down and understanding, okay, where are your pain points? You know, how much are you paying for electricity? What does that look like? How is that varying over a year, let's say? Similarly with your heating and cooling systems, what does that look like? Where are you coming from? What are you doing? What are you doing with transportation? Do you do transportation as part of your core business? Do you need to look at that and address that in a way that makes sense? So each client is a little different in terms of what they need, where they're coming from, what their goals are, where their pain points are. Some people don't do any transportation. No sense even looking at that, right? I mean, you can provide it as an amenity maybe for employees or customers, but if you're not really transporting things around, you don't have to think about, okay, well, I got to electrify my fleet to be able to do some cost reductions and to deal with the state goals. Other ones have aging HVAC systems. Well, if your HVAC system is aging, then it's really a good time to take a look at transforming it out. What can you do that's going to be more efficient? How can you access some of the incentives that are out there to make that more cost effective? And then do you have a roof? Do you have a viable roof? And if it's a viable roof, how come there's no solar on it? And what about your parking lot for solar? So every client's a little bit different in terms of their needs. And what we do is we provide a sort of a higher level 10,000 foot, and then we drill down depending on the client into the particular technology. And then we identify providers that can actually deliver on those solutions that make the most sense to that particular client. In Westchester, one of the things that's come together is that this evolution of the council, the business council, has come up with now, we formed the Clean Energy Action Coalition, or CEAC, C-E-A-C. And the BCW, the Business Council of Westchester, CEAC, is focused on how do we advance all these goals? Where can we have the most impact? And simultaneously, where can we also develop the local jobs that can come out of these changes in policies and programs and opportunities? So it's a very broad cross-section of 110 different entities who are coming from the solar, the geothermal, the air source heat pump, the electric vehicle space, the traditional bridge fuel space, which is key still. You know, folks, you know, I have some great environmental friends and I totally support the full electrification movement. It's got to happen. But even under the most aggressive scenarios, let's just look at transportation. Under the most aggressive scenarios in the CLCPA's, the scoping document, they understand that even with the most aggressive transformation, the trucking industry is still going to be 50% diesel powered in 2050. So we've got over 25 years that we're going to continue to spew diesel emissions, and those are particulates as well as carbon, out into the environment. And that hits the most those people that are both economically and environmentally challenged, the lower income communities, where in one section in New York City, the asthma rate is over 25%, where kids,
wow,
25% have asthma, right? And there was a study done that also showed that that has impact on brain functioning as well as developmental functioning and cognitive ability. And it's like, okay, it's going to take us 25 years to make this transition. And even after 25 years of making intensive activity, we're still going to have half of our diesel trucks spewing emissions. Why don't we today drop in renewable diesel? Renewable diesel is a feedstock. It's non-fossil fuel based. It does burn, but it burns cleaner. It has less emissions. It has less carbon. You could dramatically reduce the amount of emissions and carbon in the environment by looking at that as a solution, as California has done, where in California now 75% of the diesel transportation is being done by renewable diesel. Renewable diesel is the same as diesel. It's the same as heating oil. You can drop it into and replace heating oil. You can drop it in and replace diesel without any infrastructure improvements, without any changes in your capital. So it's a quick, simple, fast solution for, in Westchester, 100,000 homes that heat with oil, and then tens of thousands of trucks to transport with diesel to be able to drop in renewable diesel. So that's one of the things that we're advocating for. On a more aggressive clean energy front, we take a look at Westchester in particular, and you could see that they lost 2,000 megawatts of power with the Indian Point shutdown. And we could talk about Indian Point, nuclear power, the good, the bad, the indifference. Before I started my career, I was a security guard at a Shoreham nuclear power plant that was the one that bankrupted the Long Island Lighting Company. So I actually have a little bit of experience with nuclear power, and I could tell you the ins, the outs, and all the different challenges with it. But the reality is that you're not building a nuclear power plant that close to New York City ever again. And there are reasons why that plant came off, and we could talk at length about those. But the reality is it's off. It's done. It's not there. 2,000 megawatts is a big hole, though. And to give you a sense, even with the aggressive stuff that we've done in New York and in around, in Westchester, there's 260 megawatts worth of solar, which is great. But solar is both an intermittent resource, so it's not the 24/7 that you get with the nukes. But it's also, we only got 260, we got to get to 2,000 just to make up the peaking piece of that. So we've got a tenfold increase that we need to do in Westchester to make up that hole. And if we don't do that, then what's going to happen is that there's going to be blackouts during peak periods of time. There's going to be brownouts when there's not enough electricity to go out. And when extreme weather hits, it's going to take a long time to rebuild that and build that up to the point where people will have power again. And if people think it's costly now, I like to ask them, so what's it worth to you when you don't have power and you can't work and you can't turn on your lights and you can't turn on your computer and you don't have batteries? What are you going to do, right?
So, exactly.
So it's pay me now or pay me later. And it's also, priceless, as they say. When your power goes out, you really need power and you're willing to pay a lot for it. So let's get the infrastructure in place to make that happen. And let's overcome some of the fears that are out there. So in particular, in Westchester, there's been some moratoriums against battery storage. People have a fear of battery storage. They don't realize that in their pockets, there's that same battery type of thing, that in their computers and their laptops, there's batteries that are there. There's batteries all over the place. And these are just an extension of that. And yeah, there's been some bad examples of fires and that have been problematic, and you could definitely point to those and show those, and I understand the fear. But if you really want to be afraid of fire, you should really think about the gas line that is 100 years old that's out sitting outside your house, or your combustion furnace that's inside your house and what that's doing and doing to your kids, etc. So there's a lot that we should be concerned with fire, and definitely want to make sure that these things are built and they're safe and they have firefighters that get brought into the process. But the reality is, without battery storage helping to maintain the grid, we're going to have even bigger issues later. And you can't have moratoriums against everything, and right now there's moratoriums against community solar, which is desperately needed. Moratoriums against battery storage, which is also desperately needed, and we need to take that on and address that. And it's one of the things that SEEK, the Clean Energy Action Coalition, is focusing on that I'm so glad to be part of and help.
That's amazing. And I kind of want to keep that idea that you mentioned on earlier, is, you know, how on the show we like to focus on solar installers and developers, and especially with your knowledge of them. I mean, how important is the policy and permitting knowledge of enabling solar installers or developers to actually scale, you know, because there's a lot of these businesses out here, but they're really stuck in either, you know, they're stuck in residential, they're stuck in commercial, or, you know, they don't want to go back to residential or commercial when they're completely doing industrial. So, I mean, I guess the question is everyone understanding it, or what are the things that they need to do to be able to adapt to the changing markets?
Well, one, I think you have to be nimble on your feet, because no matter what, the market is always changing, right? And there's a lot of pieces that are changing all the time. In the States right now, you know, one of the biggest factors, uncertainty factors, is what's going to happen with the Federal Inflation Reduction Act and the tax credits that are there. We thought we had certainty with that, and now basically this latest bill that passed the House of Representatives, and that's now getting debated in the Senate, would wipe out virtually all those incentives for all the solar projects, which is a 30% plus hit in the Inflation Reduction Act. We were successful in getting a 30% tax credit that would stay in place for a number of years. You would get additional 10% if you used U.S. manufactured equipment. You get another 10% if you were in certain disadvantaged communities that had been traditionally left out of the whole process and had been devastated with fossil fuels and other polluting sources. So it was possible to get up to 50%, but even if you just took the 30%, you just said, okay, I'm just going to take the 30%, you also would get accelerated depreciation benefits, which most of my clients, the commercial clients, are in a 37% tax bracket. So now you get a 30% tax credit, you get a 30% accelerated depreciation, which in many cases you could write off in 1 year. We had 2/3 of commercial projects being underwritten by the tax benefits of it all, which is now going to be a big hit to the entire industry and to all future development if we don't get that under control. So keeping an eye on policy and being actively engaged is really key, I believe, to any business's survival. Knowing what's or looking ahead at what can happen and being prepared for it is really key as well. So in New York State, we're lucky to have this long-term solar plan that has New York Sun that's been providing incentives. Those incentives were meant to stagger down over time, and that's what they've been doing. But now with the federal stuff up in the air, it's another question of, okay, well, we thought we were scaling down with the federal incentives. We don't have the federal incentives. Now what are we going to do? And so getting involved now on the state basis is really critical. And then looking how you put this all together for a particular client, you know, one of the things that's happening and people are rightly upset about are the increasing in energy and utility rates, right? And you know, again, we can talk about utilities and the good and the bad and the pros and cons of having a monopoly-based utility versus a publicly owned utility and all the differences. But the reality is we are where we are and rates are going up. Okay, well, on the one hand, that's really bad. It's hurting a lot of people. On the other hand, now it makes all these alternatives even look better. And now you get even faster paybacks than you used to be. So there's a lot of juggling that you have to do when you're taking a look at stuff. And I would urge everybody to keep an eye on policy, because policy changes and you lose 2/3 of the underwriting of your projects that you were selling to a client, it's going to have an impact on you, and be prepared.
Exactly. No, and I think that's important, saying that policy is huge, of course. And also the aspect of looking ahead, being prepared for what might be coming and, you know, really preparing for some of the things that, you know, policy could change. So I guess in terms of yourself and, you know, the company looking ahead 6 to 12 months, you know, what's your focus with EarthKind? Are there specific markets or technologies you're prioritizing, or is there anything, you know, you'd like to share with us?
Well, One is that I have been traditionally involved in policy programs and projects. And over the last bunch of decades, projects has really been the bread and butter, and then different programs that I've rolled out with different entities at different points in time. In Westchester right now, I believe that the program piece and the change in policy piece is going to be key to making these industries, all the clean energy industries work. And that's, again, everything from efficiency, demand response, solar, heat pumps, EVs, charging stations, as well as the renewable fuels, the liquid fuels, and some bridge things as well. So to me right now, for EarthKind in particular, we'll really focus in on this piece in Westchester, because if we could be successful in having these 43 authorities that have jurisdiction come together and start to say, you know what, we recognize now that there is this big need. We have to come together to overcome it. We can't rely on the federal government. We can't rely on the state government. We have to take control of our own assets and our own resources and generate our power locally and deal with our own energy situation as much as possible locally. Can never do it in isolation. We're all interconnected. We all get that. But simultaneously, what can we do as individual communities that are going to make us more resilient, have more reliable power, more self-sufficient, and in the long term, save us money? And that's a really, I believe, doable thing. Because of my relatively unique background, I think I can play a key role in helping people make that happen, and I'm looking forward to it. So really, we're going to be focused a lot in the next 6 to 9 months or so, even longer potentially, in Westchester, helping this million people in Westchester show to the rest of the state and the country, look, there's a way to do this, and there's a way to do this that makes sense, that saves people money if you structure it right, that streamlines the process, that gets this additional clean generation into place, that gets some backup and resiliency, both for daily use, for peak power times, as well as during extreme weather events, and we can reduce carbon immediately and long-term with some interim strategies that can also have a major impact very quickly. And I think that's, to me, very exciting. And I like being at the cutting edge of what's happening and helping develop new models. So that's where I'm going to be.
That's amazing. And I think to overcome such things like that, like you mentioned, there's always so much movement. You're doing so much throughout the day. There's a lot to, you know, focus on. So I think one thing that's important is, you know, how you resolve these problems. So I guess what's one bottleneck in your field, or, you know, in the company that you'd love to see resolved? Is it like the workforce? Is it, you know, regulatory, or is it like tech integration? Like what would that look like?
Yeah, it ain't one thing. I'm sorry. I wish it was. So in the Clean Energy Action Coalition, EarthKind was hired to coordinate it. So we call ourselves a conductor, actually. And we have 9 different working groups. And the different working groups deal with all the different aspects of what we feel need to be done. It's everything from data. Where is the energy currently coming from? Where do we want it to come from? How much do we need? What's that look like? Through incentives and financing, what incentives are out there? What incentives can be out there? What are the financing that needs to be in place? Case studies. It's amazing to me that, you know, all of us, even in the field, don't know what somebody else has done. And it's a very similar project to what we're currently thinking about doing. We think no one else has done it. The client thinks no one else has done it. Yet, you know, a few miles away, there's somebody who's done it. So why don't we have them as the basis to show that people, hey, you're not going to be the first. There's other people that have done this. And that's part of it, too, is getting that information out there that these technologies are proven, they're solid, they're cost-effective, they save people money, and they're done all the time. And there are qualified providers that can deliver that. So we've got a piece that's dealing just with that. We've got various different folks that are coming together. And I think that, you know, part of it as well is the workforce, and the workforce is key, right? So we have a working group that's just focused on workforce issues. One of the first things that we did is we brought together all the workforce providers, all the folks that are out there doing the training, and we asked them, okay, so what's the state of the industry? Where are we at? And they pulled together, the state has done a great job about some of the documentation. It actually started with E2, the environmental entrepreneurs doing it, showing that, hey, here's all these clean energy jobs. There's hundreds of thousands of them in New York State already. And what is a clean energy job? What does that look like? Who's involved with it? You know, it's not just the solar guys. There's the solar guys, there's the efficiency guys, there's the renewable fuel guys, there's the EV transportation guys, there's the HVAC people, there's the plumbers that do stuff, there's the electricians that do stuff, there's the lawyers that are involved in this, there's the administrators, there's the accounts that got to be involved as well, the finances, the banks. So the clean energy industry is kind of amorphous out there, and we're helping to define what does that look like, what are the needs, who has hiring challenges where they need qualified people, what are the qualifications that they need to do that, and then one of the things that I was blown away that wasn't there, and we talked to the Department of Labor, we talked to all the training institutions, et cetera, they all have silos, right? So there's a path if you're going to do solar, there's a path if you're going to do air source heat pumps, there's a path if you're going to do geothermal, but they don't necessarily talk to each other. There's even in Con Edison, the utility, and New York State, which has incentives program, each incentive program is siloed. So one of the first things that we're doing is we're bringing together a comprehensive AI-driven database of who are the clean energy organizations that are doing business, and what do they look like, and where are they located, and how do we contact them, and how do we get them involved, and how do we get them all on the same page so we're all rowing in the same direction as opposed to all these different directions. So we're unifying the clean energy industry, and it's a diverse and amorphous industry, but we're bringing that all together, and we're looking at all the challenges. And, you know, the interesting thing about these technologies is that they're local jobs, right? I mean, you know, you can't outsource the solar installation to somebody across the world, right? You can use some of their financing, potentially you can use some of their technologies, but you can't have the installation done unless it's done locally. So that's an important factor, because in every community they're dealing with housing and affordability. There's not enough housing to go around. It's not affordable. It's always going up. It's too expensive. Energy is a key component of that affordability, and having a decent paying job is a part of that as well. So if we can have local, good-paying jobs delivering energy services that then reduce costs, provide more affordable communities to live in, now we're really hitting the holy grail of touching on all the bases. And that's something that we're really looking forward to.
That's amazing. And I think unifying the different sectors is fantastic. But I feel like that obviously comes with its own challenges. So I guess, you know, in your experience of, you know, winning clients and, you know, actually helping them through things, what's the process of maybe getting leads, figuring out who needs your help, who needs your services? And I guess what's that entire process look like?
Yeah. So for us, it's been really a lot of word of mouth, you know, and networking. So, and that's one of the things I can say about the Business Council of Westchester. It is the most effective networking organization I've ever seen. They have events pretty much every week, sometimes several events per week, where you're meeting new people all the time who are in different fields that are coming together that need your services, and or you can help them with their particular pieces. So for us, I've been through various different waves of business, and I went through a bunch of stuff, could talk on a personal basis at some point about things. But at one point, I decided that instead of striving to create a megalopolis of industries, what I really wanted to do was to leverage my skills, ability, talents, experience with a bunch of entities to help them really grow and deliver, and I would make a small slice of it as opposed to trying to run the whole thing. Different times I've run the whole thing, but I'm a good leader. I'm a good inspirational leader. I'm not a good manager, you know, myself. So I don't like having to tell people what to do. I like working with people who have their own business, their own incentive, their own structure, who are going to do stuff because it makes sense for them. And I can help them make that happen. So for me, that's where I played a key role. And, you know, on the downside, I guess, I haven't had a structured marketing sales program in place that then lets us grow exponentially like I'm helping some other people grow. So it's all good. It's all good. You know, I like to keep my, as my wife said, I like to keep myself doing different things. And this has been a really exciting way for me to continue to always learn, always do new things, always have more positive impact, leverage my skills and abilities so that others can also leverage their skills, abilities, their businesses. And some of them, you know, have gone on to create thousands and thousands of jobs, which is wonderful. And I wish them all the best. And I'm very excited and happy and proud to have been part of that. That's not my goal. My goal is to deliver systemic change on a one-on-one basis with different clients, but systemic change on a programmatic and policy basis to communities that they can then become a source of, a beacon. I think the president of the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, came to our energy conference in March and basically said that Westchester, with what we were doing with the Clean Energy Action Coalition, was a beacon to the rest of New York State, to the country as a whole, and in some ways to the world, of how people can come together, the business community can come together with policy leaders, with government, with nonprofits, with for-profits, and with our clean energy industry, and help make a substantial difference that will do all the things that we want to do with climate, but simultaneously also do it with cost and with technologies that make a lot of sense and create jobs and build resiliency, et cetera, et cetera.
That's fantastic. I think that's a great way to kind of close it out. You touched on some of the best parts that I've been excited to hear about. And, you know, honestly, fantastic, Ron. I really thank you for being here and, you know, bringing perspective, not just from the field, but from, you know, decades of navigating clean energy transitions, you know, at really every level. So I want to thank you again, Ron. It was fantastic for myself, from the audience. We really appreciate your time. And I really hope we can chat soon, because I think there's a lot of great things that you're doing. And I'd love to stay on board, maybe have you on again sometime in the future.
It's my pleasure, man. You're doing great stuff, and getting the word out there is a big part of what we need to make happen. So thank you for all your great work and making it happen. And let me know how I can help. And if folks want to reach us, they could look at earthkindenergy.com. It's like mankind, but earthkind energy is obviously energy.com. Drop me a note. I'm on LinkedIn, Ron Kamen, K-A-M-E-N, and happy to see what I can do to help you. Short calls are always, free and no obligation, no cost. And sometimes I can help folks a lot in just 15 minutes, help give them some ideas and direction that sometimes they were floundering with. But happy to help in whatever way we can. And thank you so much, Art.
Thank you. And you guys can find all the information down in the description. So take care and see you guys next time.